And move on to the fourth case, case against Rollins.
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Gerald Collins. I was appointed to represent Mr. Rollins, and I was a trial counsel on behalf of Mr. Rollins. Mr. Rollins was an individual who found himself, to say the least, in a difficult situation. He had been living here in the Chicagoland area and returned to the Kansas City, Kansas area where he had grown up. In that location, he robbed a bank after a high-speed chase. He was apprehended, pled guilty to that charge, and actually gave a proffer with regard to that charge and several other matters pending in Chicago. Unrelated to the proffer, the FBI was able to link Mr. Rollins to the four armed robberies of banks in the Chicagoland area. He was brought back to Chicago following the plea, but before sentencing at this time. Mr. Rollins then made a decision to proceed to trial with regard to the four bank robberies before the court. One of the issues we brought before the court, the trial court, in this particular matter, is a motion to sever the different counts that we found charged against Mr. Rollins. Mr. Rollins was charged with four counts of bank robbery with having a weapon in each of those charges. We feel that with regard to this matter, that the evidence from one charge to another spilled over and there was overflow from one bank robbery to the other.
But Mr. Collins, go ahead,
wouldn't all this evidence, if you charge them one at a time, wouldn't all the other evidence be admissible?
Well, that's the same reason that the trial court came to, Your Honor, that you have, but we maintain that when the court looks at the evidence, that it's so prejudicial and it's so harmful to an individual proceeding to trial to have consistently having one individual after another testify from one bank robbery to another. You have the situation, and I would kind of suggest to the court the proof of the pudding is that the very last bank robbery, that one that occurs on February 19th, there's two tellers in that bank robbery. Each of those tellers was shown the same photo spread as everybody else, and they picked out two different people out of the photo spread, or they were uncertain as to picking out Mr. Rollins. However, he was convicted on that particular charge as well as the other charges. And what you really have here is you have a situation where you have the defendant in four bank robberies. Each teller remembers something about him, a gaunt face, dark complexion.
Didn't he admit to all these bank robberies?
In the proffer in...
In the guilty plea in Missouri.
Not in the plea, but in a proffer that he gave prior to the plea. Right. In the plea, he simply pled guilty to the one charge.
Well, he admitted it. However you characterize it.
Which, of course, in his testimony at trial, he took back. But in this, that's the situation that we have here, that we feel that there's such an overflow of evidence from one robbery to another that it prejudices him in the eyes of the jury. Likewise,
how about two of these robberies are the same bank, weren't
they? Well, that's part of the confusion of this situation. Two of the robberies are the same bank, and two of the robberies are of banks very close to each other. One's located Broadway and Belmont, one's located a few blocks down the street. So you have, within a short period of time, four bank robberies of three banks, similar names, close locations, one right next to another.
And doesn't that mean, as Judge Evans said a few minutes ago, that even if you'd had four separate trials, the same parade of witnesses would have come in each of those trials? They just all would have had to do it four times because the government would have moved for other crimes evidence to come in. It would have come in because of the similarity, because of all these things that go to the 404B test, and you're back where you started.
Well, I think I realize that's the analysis. I think, though, if you're putting the evidence in as 404B, you have to look more at the strength of the evidence that you would be admitting. And admitting it, I think that looking at the strength of the evidence itself is not that strong in each individual case. It's that you have the cumulative effect of all this evidence overflowing from one count to another when prejudicing the defendant.
So do you actually think that you could have kept out this evidence on 404B grounds had there been separate trials?
Yeah, there would have been a chance certainly keeping out some of the evidence. You have one bank robbery, again, where he's not identified out of the photo spread. So you have that situation. And again, case by case, since he's in a situation of consecutive sentences with regard to the firearms account, each count becomes very important to him.
Oh, yes. No, we understand that. The 106-year sentence?
Yes, yes, Your Honor.
Effectively perpetual, right. So, yeah, no.
I have nothing further to add.
Thank you very much. Mr. Collins, Ms. Egan?
May it please the Court, my name is Christina Egan and I represent the United States. This case involves a series of very similar bank robberies, five robberies committed by the defendant that shared a number of common characteristics. The characteristics shared by the robberies are adequately distinct to form a modus operandi that identifies the perpetrator of any one of them as the perpetrator of all of them. Accordingly, the district court was well within its discretion when it denied defendant's motion to sever the four charged Chicago robberies and admitted evidence of a fifth uncharged Missouri robbery. The common characteristics shared by the robberies fall into four categories: dress, manner, gun, and physical characteristics. With respect to the dress, the robber in all four robberies wore oversized dark frame eyeglasses. In some of the robberies, he wore a dark baseball cap, and in some of the robberies, he wore the same coat, a winter coat, cream in color, with dark patches. Second, with respect to the robber's manner, he always used the same approach, came into the bank quietly, spoke to the tellers in a low, soft voice, and led off with an innocuous, legitimate question. With respect to
these
the
are pretty generic ways to rob a bank, though, aren't they? I mean, most bank robberies go along according to that scenario.
Your Honor, the one particular characteristic is the fact that he led off with an innocuous, legitimate question. In four out of the five robberies, he initially started with a question asking for change. In one of them, he started with a question asking to open a savings account. In several of the other robberies, he also followed up with questions regarding opening an account. It would be our position.
We've seen hundreds of cases where that's the gamut the bank robber tries. I'm here to open an account. By the way, give me all your money. I mean, you know, and I'm sure you've read most of them.
Yes, Your Honor, but the fact of the matter is that in all five, he used the same exact approach. It didn't vary in terms of his quiet manner.
He would still want to try all these cases together if he used completely different methods of robbing each bank, wouldn't you? He had an identification of him robbing bank A, B, C, and D, even if he did it entirely different?
If he did it, what we would submit is that you take all of these similarities together. While one similarity may in and of itself not establish a modus operandi, when you look at the dress combined with the manner, combined with the use of the gun, and combined with the physical characteristics, this in its totality would amount to a modus operandi that distinguishes this defendant from other defendants committing the same crime. While it may be that many different criminals are out there using the same manner, here in this case, this was a robber who led off with a question and also was wearing large, dark, oversized eyeglasses that one teller described as make-believe glasses, wearing a very distinctive coat. So that in its totality would amount to a modus operandi.
But, you know, I think Judge Evans is right. It seems to me you're conflating two tests. On 404B, perhaps all these similarities are significant and would help you get evidence of an uncharged crime into the case. In terms of the indictment and joining together a number of different counts, if somebody was a clever bank robber who changed his modus operandi for each one, you know, one time he goes in quietly wearing huge glasses, the next time, you know, he's flamboyantly dressed or whatever, you'd still say he's on a binge of bank robberies. We're going to stop him, wouldn't you?
Absolutely, but the basis on which the district court admitted the found that the counts were properly joined was in part the fact that we would have had four trials with,
right,
as you said, the same parade of witnesses, the modus operandi, and the other basis on which the court found that, that it was properly one trial was the fact, looking at that the trial was only, which would be short, the evidence not complex, and that the jury was ultimately properly instructed.
Well, the government here doesn't want a decision that focuses on all the little nuances and what kind of glasses he was wearing and all that. Don't you aren't you looking for a decision that would say four bank robberies within an 8-week period, all in the same general vicinity of Chicago, and the identifications of the defendant in all the robberies, that's enough to try the cases altogether?
Absolutely, and that would go to the proximity portion of the test, which the district court also looked to in finding precisely that the robberies all occurred within a short time frame, and that four of them were in Chicago.
How important is this proximity? Yeah, one here is in Missouri.
Yes, Your Honor, we recognize that one is in Missouri. However, we would point out that Missouri is close in proximity to Illinois as a contiguous state, and that also both are urban areas, and the defendant was present in both areas at the time of the robberies.
Does the convenience of the government enter into this calculus? It's a lot easier to have one trial than four, I would think, and less expensive and administratively much more appropriate. Is that something that's considered in these decisions?
I would suggest that instead of the convenience of the government, it's really promoting judicial efficiency, and the courts do look to preserving the court's resources as a whole. And that is one
of perhaps the... Perhaps I'm calling it convenience of the government. I'm mischaracterizing it. I meant the efficient and economically oriented considerations would enter into this.
Yes, and the Seventh Circuit has looked to precisely that when holding that counts should be tried together. The district court was well within its discretion with denied defendant's motion to sever the charged robberies and admitted Rule 404B evidence of the uncharged robberies. We ask that this court affirm.
Thank you. Anything more? You have four more minutes.
Judges, the only thing I'd ask the court to consider, the fact is that, as the court has pointed out, it's really different with the motion to sever as opposed to 404B, that either the district court or the government was quick to bunch both motions together, and it's really a separate decision whether or not they should be severed, the cases, or whether they should be tried together, and it's not really that all the evidence is 404B evidence coming in. There should be a decision made whether or not there should be a severance on it, and then a separate decision made whether this would be 404B evidence, which I think the defendant would have had a better chance of excluding some of it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Collins, you were appointed. The court appreciates your service to the court and to your client. And thank you also, Ms. Egan.